polite to discuss religion or politics. So let's talk about both with Jonathan Wilson Hardgrove on Steve Brown, etc.
He's an old white guy, an author, broadcaster, and seminary professor who's sick of religion. And he's brought friends. Please welcome...
That's right. It is, etc. It's Steve Brown, etc. Without Steve Brown this week.
We just took him right out.
Hey, kids, let's go to the show prep and see what Matt has for us today.
Let's see here.
I'm Eric, and my political party is Groucho Marxist. Thank you very much. And it's always a party with our favorite megachurch pastor, Zach Van Dyke. He's here. And, of course, Matt Porter. Without Matt Porter, there would be no show prep. He does lean to the right. That's mostly due to his bad leg. I was wondering where that one was going there for a second.
Goodness.
Our producer, Jinx, is working hard in a little glass booth. His audio mix is always fair and balanced.
Oh, nice.
Chung, chung, chung.
Foxy.
Do what I can.
Our video director, John Myers, is in the tech bunker. Give it up for John. John. Since you seem to be able to fix everything, maybe you should run for office.
Oh, my goodness.
And I will say this. If there's one president we can all support, it's Dr. George Bingham, the president.
Yeah.
The president of Key Life. Yeah. Hail to the chief.
Send campaign donation.
He signs the checks. And Kathy Wyatt is the soft feminine side of the program here at Key Life. Actually, Kathy took a straw poll and learned... that everybody still likes plastic straws.
Word play.
Oh, my goodness.
The bamboo ones are okay.
You know, before we go any farther, can I just say that I love the new elder statesman look with the spectacles there,
I'm
Mr.
Just,
Guzman.
I'm just falling apart.
I know. You wake up one morning, you look at the piece of paper in front of you, and you can't read it.
The funny thing is, I can't see you. I can see this paper, but I can't. But you're blurry. Am I drunk?
No.
This is what it looks like.
You're supposed to wear those a little farther down on your nose.
But then I look like I'm looking down on everybody.
The best part is you take them off and you go, if the senator will recall.
let's talk about our guest today. Everybody.
Okay.
Smarty pants dance. Here we go.
What is happening?
We have no idea.
What do you mean what's happening?
I don't know.
It's a show.
It's a show.
It's time to have a show. It's time to talk to Jonathan Wilson Hardgrove. Hey, Jonathan.
Hey, good to be with you.
So gracious for you to join us again.
Again, yes.
I know that Jonathan's been with us before.
He's got a great rap sheet. Look at this thing.
He says he's been with us multiple times, and I'm surprised that you've come back.
If you've come back at this point, it's on you.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
It's your fault from here forward.
That's right. If we have you on the program once, shame on us. More than once, shame on you. So,
all right,
Jonathan holds an MD.
Sorry to miss Brother Steve today.
I know.
Give him back reading.
You know, who knows how this would have gone if Steve was doing the interview.
You might be glad that he's not here today.
All right.
Well, we'll talk a little bit about that in just a second. But let me introduce Jonathan, give some cred here. He has an MDiv from Duke Divinity School. He's a preacher, a moral activist, and a popular writer and speaker on American religion and politics. Jonathan is a part of Red Letter Christians. Friend of Key Life.
And Shane.
Kick that off. Yeah, yep. With Shane Claiborne. Red Letter Christians. And he's co-authored a bunch of books. His latest is called Revolution of Values, Reclaiming Public Faith for the Common Good, Power to the People. Look at that. I would get that tattooed, minus the American flag. No offense, anybody. Oh, look at the scowl I got from the megachurch pastor.
No, I'm just wondering where you're going.
Who knows?
I don't know. Have no idea.
Where are we going? It's fast.
I'm so excited that you're back. I haven't seen you in a while. This is going to be fun.
I don't know where I'm going, but let me talk about the context of where we are and where we're going. So we mentioned Tony Campolo. This ministry has a long tradition of sitting down and talking about difficult things with people who we don't necessarily agree with. Now, I'm not saying that I don't agree with Jonathan, but some people at this table might not agree with Jonathan. Some of you in the audience might not agree with Jonathan. And I just want to approach this with that spirit, you know, having that in our DNA, that we would sit down, we share the belief in Jesus, in God's love for messy people, and we all get it wrong, and we know that, and we just want to sit down and see if we can learn something and love each other and talk about some difficult stuff. So that's what's going to happen. Trust me. I've read the book. there's some stuff in here that'll be challenging, but I hope that we can learn from each other. Mm. So, Jonathan, I think it would be really good to start with your journey, with your evolution as a believer, where you started and where you're at now.
Well, I was raised in North Carolina in the Southern Baptist Church, and I grew up in the 80s and 90s, which was kind of the heyday of the moral majority movement in our part of the country. I didn't realize it at the time, but my people who hadn't been incredibly politically engaged were pretty specifically targeted by the religious right to recruit us as a voting coalition. And I grew up in that and wanted to do everything I could for Jesus. So I was trying to become the Republican president for Jesus when I was a teenager. And I knew that, you know, it was a long journey and I'd have to climb the ranks. But I started out in Senator Strom Thurmond's office in D.C. when I was still in high school. I went up there to page for him. And it was in that context that I began to realize that there was more of a tension than I had thought between what the Sunday school teachers taught me and the politics that we were practicing there in D.C. And so I've been on a journey since then to try to go back to the Bible and understand what Jesus really wants from us when we engage in public life.
You really had your eyes on the presidency?
That was my goal, yeah. You know, I knew Jimmy Carter had done it, and he was a Baptist from the South. Jimmy had gone to the U.S. Naval Academy, so I thought that would be my pathway that I could get. But I was terribly disappointed to learn that you can't even go to the Naval Academy if you don't have a recommendation from a U.S. senator. And I didn't even know a U.S. senator, so I went to the Senate to try to get to know a senator well enough that they would recommend me to the Naval Academy.
Nice. Playing the long game.
So what happened then? I mean, you've got your eyes on the presidency. You're working with Strom Thurmond, and then you're well, saying I'm trying to reconcile these things with my Sunday school teacher's lessons. And I mean, where'd it go?
Your listeners may recall that Strom Thurmond was the 1948 Dixiecrat candidate for president. There was no more aggressive segregationist who worked against the civil rights movement than Strom Thurmond. And I think I began to realize that while he had changed parties and had certainly dropped the explicitly racist language, that a lot of the power dynamics that had existed for a long time in the South had realigned themselves with this moral majority. So that people who had been asked to vote for a set of politicians based on their racism were now being asked to vote for the same politicians and people who backed the same policies, more or less, but in the name of our religion. And that was a sort of note to me that something had gone awry and that religious values were really being misused. And so that's really what this book is about, a need for a revolution of values, because our values have been exploited by people who wanted to hang on to power and have used it largely against, I think, the purposes of the gospel. If Jesus's good news is to lift up the poor, to bring justice to the earth and to, you know, in some ways make the place more peaceable. I think this kind of extreme politics has driven us in the wrong direction. So particularly in this moment, in this election year, in this kind of moral crisis that we're facing as a country, I'm trying to ask Christians to go back and think again about the stories we've been told about what it means to live out our values in public life.
Let me see if I can pull this up. It just occurred to me. I dog-eared a couple of pages in the book. Okay, yeah, I think this is it. You said many who, like me, were caught up in the deception of the religious right worry that a religious left could easily mirror the mistakes of the past 40 years. It is true that political power will corrupt without regard for party or affiliation, but a moral movement can practice political realism while warning against the dangers of partisanism. I think when I read that, and please jump in, anybody, I think that hits on why it's so hard to have this conversation with people who don't agree. So if you come in and say, well, I've had this this evolution of thought, mm-hmm. and now, like, I'm not down with all those abuses of the past and, you know, what happened with mm-hmm. the, you know, all that. We know what we're talking about, right? Like, yeah. I'm not down with all that. Then right away, the fear is that people are going, well, wait a minute. Now you're just on the other side. And yeah. and now you want the power to do it your way. Like, yeah, we're all about helping people. We just don't agree on how to get there. And now you're just asking for the power. And couldn't we... Wait, isn't it better if we have the power and we'll make sure that we do it right? We're not sure about you having the power because you might make things worse while you're trying to make things right. You know what I'm saying? I want to just talk about that dynamic and how can we get past it and talk about some things that matter. So, Jonathan Wilson Hartgrove, Revolution of Values, Reclaiming Public Faith for the Common Good. Don't go anywhere.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have four mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These four mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
Welcome back to Etc. It's Steve Brown, Etc. without Steve Brown this week. Eric, Matt, Zach, George, Kathy, Jinx, and John are here. And our guest is Jonathan Wilson Hartgrove. And he's the author of Revolution of Values, Reclaiming Public Faith for the Common Good. And in the last segment, we talked about Jonathan's story. He told his story about how he was, part of the whole moral majority thing and a warrior in the culture war, right? And moving along, and he even had his eye on the presidency. And then he started looking at, like, some of this stuff that was not consistent with what he was seeing in the Bible about Jesus' teaching. And so then he starts undergoing his own personal, revolution. And so this book is talking about the outcome of all that. And there's stories in here, and we'll hear some of them today that illustrate what Jonathan's talking about. But we left off with a question that came from something that I read in the book where you basically talk about how, okay, you got the conservatives who are kind of influenced by this religious milieu and not altogether in a positive way. And then you say, well, we need to really stand up for the poor and do things right. And then there's this danger where, people could go, well, wait a minute. Don't you just want power on your side? Now you're a Democrat. Now you're a progressive, you're on the other side of the aisle, and you just want to do it your way. So how do you address that? I mean, how do you come into a place where you can have a real, meaningful, yeah. fruitful conversation with people that are defensive and going, I know you. I don't even have to talk to you. Like, I know what you're about before we've...
That's a good question, because it's so easy to become cynical and to think that, you know, everybody's either shilling for one side or the other. And I think American history has helped me grapple with this quite a bit, because if you do take the long view and look back at the role faith has played in American public life, you know, it's pretty clear that faith has always been misused, not just in this country, but certainly in this country's history, that, you know, there were people who used the Bible to justify slavery. There were people who used the Bible to justify Jim Crow in the South. So the Bible has always been misused, but the Bible has also always motivated people to work for change in this system. And I think that's an encouraging thing, that it's not always a sort of cynical, you know, you're either working for one side or the other and everybody's equally compromised. As a matter of fact, the only thing I think that has consistently moved this country toward a more perfect union, toward justice for all people, has been faith-rooted movements like the abolitionist struggle, like the folks who, you know, worked together to make sure that, you know, kids weren't getting their fingers cut off by factories and machines, you know, early in the 20th century, by the people who came together and formed a fusion coalition in the civil rights movement. So I want to help people lean into that tradition and learn from the prophetic way of reading scripture that says, you know, it's not about left or right. It's not about Democrat or Republican. It's about having some values that we figure out how to put into practice in public life. And we work with whoever is willing to work together on those issues.
Jonathan, it's funny you mentioned the phrase, you know, working for change. There's a lot of folks who would have been in your position who had these very strongly held beliefs. You put them into action. You're trying to make a change. And then you got to D.C. You started seeing the kind of hypocrisy, kind of that disconnect. There's a lot of folks who have been in a comparable position where, like, you know what? I'm not going to work for change. I'm going to say I think the system is just a bunch of hooey. And ditch the religion thing entirely. But you didn't. Yeah. You saw that, you know, it's not that the beliefs are wrong, it's that the applications are wrong. What kept you there? What kept you from being disillusioned with the whole thing, not just the politics, but the religion itself?
Yeah, do you still want to be president?
No, I don't. But I am part of a movement that wants to reshape what people who are running for president talk about. I do still care about public life. And I think for me, the great gift was that I met a minister from my home state here in North Carolina, a fellow by the name of William Barber. And he introduced me to the tradition that his parents had introduced him to. It was his parents were very involved in the civil rights movement. He told me, you know, his daddy taught him there's no way to follow Jesus without working for justice in the world. And that wasn't just a sort of personal conviction. It was a shared conviction of the Black church in the South and certainly of a broader movement that connected that faith with others who were working for justice. And it's been within that kind of sort of faith rooted freedom struggle that I've been able to recognize a community of people who are living out their faith in public. I don't think the religious right was wrong about that. They said, you know, you ought to give your life to Jesus and you ought to give your efforts to working for Jesus in public. I think that's right. I think what was wrong was that they got in with some political operatives who convinced them that the only issues that mattered were these wedge issues that they were going to use to keep Republicans in power. And what that meant was that they put a whole lot of corporate money behind an agenda that that used cultural wedge issues to keep people in power who were willing to deregulate the oil companies, that were willing to compromise on the environment because it's what the oil companies wanted. It served an agenda that hurts most people and used cultural religious wedge issues to do it. So that's what I'm trying to challenge. I really do feel like I come from a people who were lied to. And in many ways, people with the best of intentions got on board with a political agenda that not only has hurt other people, but even hurts us. I mean, in the county where I was raised, the power company has been dumping coal ash that's gotten into the water stream and has given people cancer, black people and white people, mostly poor folks who live out there and drink wells that have been poisoned by this coal ash. Now, the power company gives all this money to politicians in Raleigh who say their family values politicians, but they voted to deregulate the power company. And so they haven't held them accountable for poisoning the people, but these people's family members are dying. How can that be pro-family? You know, that's, I think that's the kind of thing I'm trying to help people see, and the kind of thing that's helped me see that this is not a way of living out the values that they taught us in Sunday school.
Mm. Oh, man. So, I mean, you mentioned one story there, and your book is filled with stories of people that you've encountered as you've journeyed around. I mean, you've gone around the country meeting with people, and mm-hmm. and you have some incredible stories to tell, and we're running out of time in this segment. But when we get back, I'd like to hear some of those, and no doubt, as you tell those stories, they will bring up issues that we're all familiar with, and you know, you find yourself kind of going, well, okay, yeah, wait a minute, yeah, that person was hurt, but this policy, you know, I really don't agree with for these reasons and this and that. And then you dive right back into that same kind of thinking. And just as we go through this, it's, you know, my concern as we were preparing for the show is to say, all right, well, let's really think about what Jonathan's saying, the people that are being affected, and do we really have to go into this argument? Can we listen? And that's what this is about. So we're talking with Jonathan Wilson Hartgrove. The book is Evolution of Values, Reclaiming Public Faith for the Common Good. Get the book, read it, and think.
From Key Life comes two mini books, What Do You Do for a Living? And Life After Retirement. What Do You Do for a Living by Justin Holcomb addresses the problem of defining ourselves by what we do and how we perform in our work instead of by who we know. A gracious, loving God who defines who we are. Life After Retirement by Steve Brown examines how those transitioning from work to retirement often experience a loss of purpose in life, and how the quest for personal significance can best be answered by God's radical grace, love, and purpose for our lives sufficient to carry us through this transition. What Do You Do for a Living and Life After Retirement can help guide people struggling with either work or retirement. These two Key Life mini books are available through keylife.org for a donation of $6.
You're back on Etc. Steve Brown, Etc. without Steve Brown this week. He will be back next week. Isn't that correct?
I believe he will. Yes, indeed.
Okay. Stay tuned and you'll hear who our guest will be then. We're talking with Jonathan Wilson Hartgrove. JonathanWilsonHartgrove.com is where you want to go. And you can follow him at, what is that? Is that a Twitter handle? At Wilson Hartgrove.
Now, kids, cover your left eye.
Kids,
now what can you read?
Is that the Twitter? Is that the Twitter there? All right. Revolution of Values is the book that Jonathan wrote, Reclaiming Public Faith for the Common Good. There are a number of stories in here that are challenging, make you think, bring up issues that you're familiar with, and maybe get you thinking about them in a different way and go, how did I come by this belief? And so, Jonathan, you had one that we talked about off the air that I think would be illustrative of such a thing.
Yeah. One way that the religious right and the so-called pro-life, pro-family movement has sort of been shifted by the political commitments of the partners has been, you know, the Voting Rights Act of 1965 really expanded voting rights in this country to include African Americans who had been disenfranchised in the South. And then shortly thereafter, the Immigration and Nationalization Act made America a much less white country. And so one of the political anxieties of people who've been trying to hold on to power is that the demographics have been becoming less white and more black and brown. And This has led to voter suppression efforts, which I write about in the book, but also to a very anti-immigrant agenda among people who are worried about losing power. And what that has meant under this current administration is just an extremism that I think people all across the board have recognized as kind of inhumane. I mean, putting kids in cages, this notion that, you know, people who've lived here for 10, 20, 30 years can be ripped from their family and sent to a country that they don't even remember. This is happening regularly. And one thing that happened here where I am in Durham is a fellow who got a order from ICE to leave the country. He'd been living here for 33 years, raised his family here. He actually pastors a church next town over in Raleigh, North Carolina. And he reached out to us and asked if there was, you know, any way we could stand with him and his family as he tried to stay here. And we invited him to take sanctuary in our church. Sanctuary is a, you know, long tradition where churches have offered people a space where the, government won't come after them while they try to negotiate some sort of mediation. And so he's here in our church and is in many ways a sort of concrete example of how this zero tolerance immigration policy of this current administration is separating families and impacting people. But, you know, one day he got fella knocked on the door and he opened the door and he was holding a bag from the local McDonald's, had a box of pancakes in it. And he said, you know, I read in this newspaper article about you that you like pancakes. And Jose said, oh, thank you. You know, I do. So he said, well, I wanted to bring you some because I voted for Donald Trump. I'm a Republican. You know, I've always voted for Republicans, but I didn't think this would happen to you. And Jose said, oh, well, we need to talk. So he invited him in and they have struck up a friendship. He's not the only one. He's actually had other people come and talk to him. I think there are a lot of people who are so shaped by this narrative that says, you know, if you are a Christian, then you're a Republican. And if you're a Republican, you have to vote for the Republican's nominee, no matter what their policies are, that they haven't entirely considered how this is impacting real people. And in my experience, when folks who, you know, sort of feel that uncomfortable feeling in their gut when they hear this president, you know, cussing people out at rallies, or, you know, when they see something that they think, oh, I don't know a lot about what's going on, but that doesn't seem right. You know, when they see the tallies of the lies that this president tells, a lot of those people feel uncomfortable, but they think, well, you know, I can't vote for a Democrat, so what would I do? I think it's really important to have context where people can sit down with folks who are immediately impacted by the way power is being abused and to hear from those people. And I've seen that transform folks. So that's why I wanted to share the kind of stories that I share in this book and invite people to sit down and read the scriptures with people who are directly impacted by the kinds of policies that this narrative has supported.
Have you seen people shift in their, political convictions because of this kind of thing? And then where do they go? And what does that look like? You know, for somebody to be challenged by one of these stories and then say, well, you know, I want to do some things different, but I, you know, still can't vote for a Democrat. Yeah. what does that look like? I think it's so foreign to even conceive of. Yeah. And if you're on the front lines, are you seeing it?
Yeah, it happens. We worked with the Republican mayor here in North Carolina because his hospital got shut down when the Republicans in North Carolina denied Medicaid expansion. There wasn't funding for the local hospital. And as he was working for the hospital, he was just looking for any kind of allies who would stand with him. Well, a friend of mine was marching with him. He wanted to walk to D.C. to make the case for this. And on the way to D.C., he turns to my friend and he says, why are you walking with me? You're just a damn liberal. And this this friend of mine looked at him and said, Adam, I'm not a liberal. I'm a radical. You know, there's something other than left and right. There's a radical moral center that says, you know, some things aren't about left versus right. They're about right versus wrong. And I think we have to reclaim that moral center.
All right. The book is Revolution of Values, Reclaiming Public Faith for the Common Good. Jonathan Wilson Hardgrove is our guest. And join us on the other side of the break. We'll hear some more stories, get questions from the table, and visit JonathanWilsonHardgrove.com and follow him on Twitter at Wilson Hardgrove. We'll be right back with more Etc.
There's an African proverb that goes this way. Every morning in Africa, a gazelle wakes up. He knows he's got to run faster than the fastest lion or he's going to get killed. Every morning, a lion wakes up, and he knows he's got to outrun the slowest gazelle or he's going to starve to death. It doesn't matter if you're a lion or a gazelle, when the sun comes up, you better start running. You ever feel that way? Don't. Life isn't a jungle, and the Lion of Judah is your protector. Get moving. But wait, you don't have to run. He'll go with you. I'm Steve Brown. You think about that. Share what you just heard with a friend. Go to youthinkaboutthat.com.
Welcome back to Etc. It's Steve Brown, Etc. without Steve Brown this week, and we're mixing religion and politics. And like Tony Campolo said, when you mix religion and politics, it's kind of like mixing horse manure and ice cream. Doesn't ruin the horse manure, but you know, leaves your ice cream to be wanting. I don't think that's an exact quote, but it messes up the ice cream, is what I'm saying. So, Jonathan,
where's the ice cream?
I was told there'd be ice
over
cream.
Over there with the horse manure. Revolution.
I found the horse manure.
Revolution of Values, Reclaiming Public Faith for the Common Good is the name of the book. And Zach has a question for Jonathan.
Oh, okay. Great. Yeah, I absolutely do.
No, wait. George.
No, I've got a question.
George has a question.
No, wait.
For
I, you, no, you ask it. No,
you,
I'm going
to. No, okay. Okay. Right.
No, wait. I'll ask.
All right. No, wait. Kathy.
That's our time, everybody.
Has a question.
See you next week.
For Jonathan.
Jonathan, we. So I'm at a church, and we decided to do a series just on justice as it's laid out in the Bible, and my gosh, I've never received so many letters or angry emails, or, you know, we lost, you know, they like to joke that it's a megachurch. It's not really a megachurch, but it's even less of a megachurch.
Not anymore after that sermon.
Right, after the justice
after
series. And really what we were doing, we weren't even making it extremely practical as far as like here are our current issues. We just wanted to lay a framework for what the Bible says about justice. And people were reading all kinds of things into that politically. And it people couldn't even engage in the topic. So I'm just wondering, why do you think that is? Why when we even just look at the Bible and what God clearly says about his heart for justice, why is it so hard for Christians to kind of wrestle with that?
Well, it's if you pay attention to the stories, it's always been kind of difficult. You know, the prophets didn't get on so well. And when Jesus quoted them, they tried to kill him. And then they did, you know. So I think.
So I shouldn't have expected anything other than what we experience is what you're saying.
The prophetic call for justice is always a challenge to the powers that be. Mm. Because the powers that be overlook the voices that God calls us to listen to most closely, the poor, the marginalized, the alien stranger in your land, the women and the children. That's what the prophets point to over and over again. And I think it's been a consistent theme through history that people in power tend to listen to the wealthy, the other people who have power and can thus keep them in power. We have a responsibility as the church to be with those God has chosen to listen to and be with. And I think it does challenge us. You know, it's not just a challenge we have to issue to somebody else. It challenges us. Mm-hmm. And I think a Christianity that doesn't want to be challenged anymore really isn't very much the faith of Jesus. It's more of a civil religion that, you know, makes people feel all right about themselves.
Yeah.
So we got to always grapple with that.
Mm-hmm.
George.
Oh, well, Jonathan, I was wondering what, you know, amidst the stories and so forth, you, when you're talking about, say, someone with, you know, that is persuaded by some of the stories you've been talking about, and really wants to reach out to the other side, but is concerned that, you know, when you kind of start with a confrontational kind of, or a, you know, the sort of the language that tends to cause reactions with people. What have you found has been one of the most effective places where you can connect with people from the other side politically without them feeling like, you know, someone is being, you know, just sort of self-righteous and condemning and so forth? What, is there a place where you've found that reaching out to, say, the Trump supporters? I mean, you mentioned, you know, providing sanctuary for the pastor, but are there other places sort of generically or particular yeah. issue categories that you find are good places to reach out?
I think it's incredibly important to get directly involved with people who are impacted by issues and then to invite other people to get involved. One example, for years I taught a writing class on death row here in North Carolina, and there's lots of people all over the political spectrum who have supported the death penalty for a long time. I'm against it. I'm against it because I don't think, you know, killing people to show that killing people is wrong makes a lot of sense. But I'm also against it because I know from my experience that poor and black people in this country are the people who get the death penalty, and lots of other folks do terrible things and don't get it. So I think its application has been unfair and unjust. But anyway, you make those arguments, and I don't think they often sway people very much. But when I taught that class, every time I met anyone who had a genuine concern about the issue, wherever they were, I'd say to them, why don't you come visit class with me sometime? And I've had, you know, the most conservative Republicans and the most liberal Democrats come and sit in that circle. No one who left that circle left thinking that the people there needed to die. And I think that kind of direct encounter with people who are directly impacted by issues is what can change people. And I think it's also what changes us. You know, I don't believe this stuff fundamentally because I have some kind of framework or some sort of ideology that makes me believe it. I believe it because I'm part of a movement that has shown me that the power of God is real when people come together from all kinds of different backgrounds to try to work for the common good and for a more just society together. I've seen miracles happen in those places, and it keeps my faith alive.
In the book, you quote Jesus quoting Isaiah when he started his public ministry, that he came to you guys know the scripture better than me. He came to bind up the brokenhearted.
The
Spirit of the Lord upon me is
set
to
the captives free.
Set the captives free and preach the gospel to the poor, right? And you know, and I know in the context that you bring it up, you're saying you know, the actually poor. And a lot of times I read it, others that I know read it and go, oh, well, that's the good news to me, a sinner. You know, to me, poor in spirit, as it were. And I wonder, in the short time that we have left, is there something about getting that message of the gospel to realize that, you know, okay, I might be rich, you know, in material means, you know, but to realize that I'm poor, I'm the poor one, that I could then identify with the actual poor. Is there something about getting the gospel that softens the heart to your message?
Great, great spiritual teacher, Jean Vanier, died last year. He used to say, people come to Christian community to try to help the poor. They stay in community when they realize they are the poor. Mm. I think the same can be said of movements for justice. I'm part of the Poor People's Campaign and would encourage other people to learn about it, because people in the Poor People's Campaign have shown me that I, with them, am in a struggle for a world that works better for all people. I want to be part of that, and I think Jesus calls us to be part of it. PoorPeople'sCampaign.org, if you want to be part of it where you are, it's in every state.
That's the website I was trying to find before. PoorPeople'sCampaign.org.
Campaign.
All right, thanks so much for spending time with us, Jonathan. Maybe you'll come back again, maybe. Huh? What do you think?
For sure.
Hi, this is Eric, producer of Steve Brown, Etc. If you've been listening very long, you know I'm a struggling believer, and I'd love to share some things that have helped. At Key Life, we believe that the deepest message of the ministry of Jesus and the Bible is the radical grace of God for sinners and sufferers. And we have four mini books that'll help you believe that no matter what you've done or what you're going through, God's not mad at you. Feeling Guilty, Suffering, and Faith and Doubt by Steve Brown will help you apply healing biblical truth to where it hurts the most. And my mini book, The Gift of Addiction, How God Redeems Our Pain, shows that coming to the end of ourselves is actually the beginning of faith. These four mini books are in the Grace for Sinners and Sufferers mini book combo, and it's available at keylife.org for a suggested donation of $12. They're also individually available for a suggested donation of $4.
Welcome back to Etc. Steve Brown, Etc. Without Steve Brown. So sad to not have Steve
make it
here.
It sound like it's never, like he's never coming back again or something.
No, I know. I just, if you didn't enjoy this and you miss Steve, I want you to know that he's coming back next week. Do you know who's going to be the guest next
week? I do.
We're just providing sanctuary for you.
That's right. Providing sanctuary for Eric.
They're coming to take me away. To the funny farm where the life is beautiful all day long. Kathy, who's the guest?
Oh, my goodness. Anyway, as I was saying before I was so rudely interrupted, we're actually following along sort of with what we've been talking about today. Next week, Tremper Longman is going to be with us. He's a professor out at Westmont College, and he's written a new book called The Bible and the Ballot, Using Scripture in Political Decisions. I suspect, call me crazy, but I suspect that there might be a little bit of a different twist on it with Tremper than there was this week.
Did you say Tremper?
No, I said Tremper.
Oh, Tremper.
But I think it could possibly be a very interesting follow-up because I have a sneaking suspicion that we might have some folks out there who might have been just a tad concerned about today's.
Oh, yeah. I have no doubt that there are multitudes of the concerned who will contact Key Life.
No, no.
I'm a bit concerned.
Drop the comments in YouTube, man. Let's mix it up. Let's mix it up.
Let's share it. Viral.
You're like, hey, can you believe this guy?
But as we typically do with this program, the whole purpose is to demonstrate that Christians can disagree with each other without going out of their ever-loving minds. So next week, we'll have somebody with a little different perspective, little different topic, but it's the political season anyway, so
yeah,
it's kind of like,
you
kind of look at yourself and say, why am I getting all hyped up about this? It's that time of year every 4 years.
Doesn't it feel like we never got out of the last
it
one?
Does. Yeah. Yeah. It does.
Like this has been the longest political season ever.
Okay,
I want to read a quote as we wrap this program up, and as we get into these discussions, remember this from Ronald Rollheiser, lest you get too self-righteous in these discussions, whatever side you're on. The church is always God hung between two thieves. Thus, no one should be surprised or shocked at how badly the church has betrayed the gospel and how much it continues to do so today. It had never done very well. Conversely, however, nobody should deny the good the church has done either. It has carried grace, produced saints, morally challenged the planet, and made, however imperfectly, a house for God to dwell in the earth. The church is always what it was at the beginning, at the original crucifixion. God hung among thieves.
Wow.
So we're all messed up. Mm-hmm. You might not be right. So you might want to listen. And listen next week. Steve will be back for Steve Brown, Etc., not just this silly little Etc. thing. Until next time.
Go ahead.
May God bless the hell out of you.